Good evening. It is Tuesday. And as you all know what Tuesday is for me, it's for me still a year and a bit later, one of my favorite days of the week. Why? Because I get to play with you. Welcome, Donna. Welcome, Dennis. So tonight I am back from vacation. I went to Curacao. That was really, really great. I got burnt to a cinder. My face is burnt. My shoulders are burnt. My back is burnt. Everything is burnt because my bikini was the size of a postage stamp. Literally. Look, what's the point in going on vacation wearing a bikini and it's like really, it's like a flag. You got a flag on your body. You might as well a bikini that's really small. So my bikini was just enough to cover the crack of my bum and my nipples. And now I'm paying the piper because I am completely burned, right? I don't know who told me. But again, I forgot that I'm allergic to sunblock. And I tried a new one. And of course, I got burned. And hey, but I'm back. I had a great time. Curacao is very lovely. The people are absolutely wonderful. Shout out to Varushka, my friend in Curacao, for hosting me and taking me to a really great steakhouse. But the people are really nice. I got free rides by the people. I really felt taken care of. I saw my first live sea animal show, which I saw sea lions. Terrible. I'm sorry. It was so sad. I thought I was having a wonderful moment. Like when I was walking across this bridge across the water, I saw these two sea lions and I'm like, oh my God, sea lions. They're just like bobbing up and down. I thought, oh, maybe they came in from the ocean. Oh no. That was their little, that's just where they lived in that little sort of, it was pretty wide and big, but you know, they're so trained that what they do is they just go back and forth and back and forth. And then they look up. And they go back and forth. And then the alarm, some kind of alarm goes off when it's time for them to do a show. And they go and they sit on this raft thing that's floating around or sit on the side. And they literally entertain for fish. You know, it was really sad. And I was making up this story like, guys, follow me. Follow me. I'll take you into the ocean. No, Noreen, we can't come with you. They feed us here. But if you go free and go into the ocean, you can get as much fish as you want. Oh, no, Noreen, we entertain and we get fish here. We can't leave. It's scary out there. I was making up this whole story. I think I'm the mad one, not the fish. But it was so, so sad. It was so sad. I don't know. I can't talk about it. And they had dolphins and stuff. I would not go see the dolphins. I couldn't. That would have just like totally ruined my life. Hi, guys. Thanks for being on the show. So tonight we have an amazing guest. We have Anna Loth. If I don't mess up your name, then it's not a show. I mess up everybody's name. Lotha Rotman. And Anna is from, Hannah is from originally Austria, you said?
Born in Austria.
She's born in Austria, lived in?
In several countries.
Several countries.
Grew up in Belgium.
Grew up in Belgium, and she's now here in New York. And so Anna owns the foundation, not-for-profit foundation, Palms for Life. So, Anna, I will give you the pleasure of introducing yourself because we're going to talk about all what you do, why you do it, how you came about doing it. So introduce yourself to the people.
Thank you very much, Noreen. It's
welcome.
A pleasure to be here. A few words about me, but probably the first words about me are just two. Mm-hmm. I'm a global mother.
Oh, okay.
This is how people call me these days. And I feel that at this time of my life, mm-hmm. I identify fully with being a global mother. And
I'd rather be a global sexing
mother. Well, no, especially I see the motherhood as a person who loves her children, uh-huh. who stands up for them, defends mm-hmm. them, mm-hmm. educates them, mm-hmm. feeds them, mm-hmm. defends their rights. Mm-hmm. And I have that feeling that I have a sort of a life mission uh-huh. to be a mother for everybody who can take me as a mother.
Is just interrupting you because you just said something that was really great. So is this something that you've always wanted to do, or is this something that is just like as you've gotten older you've stepped into?
No, I think it is part of my very nature. Mm-hmm. I think that even as a very young child, mm-hmm. I had a natural way of reaching out to others. Mm-hmm. To loving others, mm-hmm. to wanting the best and protecting others. Mm-hmm. And I was in charge of my little brothers, for instance. When they grew up, I practiced so much on them, exactly. And then later on, I started my international career when I was 26 years old. And I arrived in Burkina Faso.
Oh, Burkina Faso. Yeah, mm-hmm. I know it.
At the time, it was called Upper Volta.
Upper Volta?
Volta. Hmm. And the capital is Ouagadougou.
So do you speak the language you speak?
No, they have several languages, but one of the languages, the official language there is French, mm-hmm. I speak. So mm-hmm. that was very easy. But mm-hmm. they have other important languages.
Do they speak English there?
No, they don't speak English. It's a West African country and so has been colonized previously by France. And so they speak French, mm-hmm. but they have a local language, which is the majority of people speak a language called Moré.
Okay.
So, but that language I don't speak. But when I arrived there...
So let's go back a bit. So
yes.
you arrive in Burkina Faso, right?
Yes.
Burkina Faso, right? And what were you doing there? Like, were you visiting? Were you on vacation? What were you doing? Was you working?
No, yes. It was my first job overseas. Mm-hmm. With the UN.
Okay.
I was hired to be a junior professional officer.
And what did that mean?
It means you start your career with the UN. Mm-hmm. And Belgium at that time, because I was a Belgian, I had become a Belgian citizen. Okay. Belgium sent a certain amount of people every year to the UN, young people, so that they can be exposed to the UN world.
Right.
And I was one of them. And they gave me 3 years under the Belgian sponsorship to be working with the UN. But after those 3 years, I was taken up by the UN and I continued my career with them for many, many years.
So your title was what?
I was, when I arrived in Burkina Faso, I was a junior professional officer and I was working in the Home Economics Department mm-hmm. of the Ministry of Agriculture. Mm-hmm.
And what did you actually do?
What I actually did was, you know, I worked with, that was so beautiful, I worked with local group of women mm-hmm. because, you know, those societies are very interestingly organized.
Right.
They have traditionally they're organized by gender and by age. So mm-hmm. in the communities or in the villages, you have groups of young girls, groups of young men, of the girls after they have been initiated, mm-hmm. a group of the boys after they have been initiated. But then you have also the group of the young women, mm-hmm. the young women who are the ones who do all kind of works. They do very often the most difficult tasks in the villages.
And what would that be like?
They started the day collecting water, collecting wood, preparing some basic food, getting some of the basic grains mm-hmm. that they have. Some of them go to the market. They sell a few things, a few mm-hmm. tomatoes here and there. But they take care of the children. But then they also have assigned to them a piece of land, a mm-hmm. communal land. And one of the tasks of my unit, of my project, was to teach them to grow crops that would give them some form of income. Okay. And in that case...
Had you ever grown crops before?
Never, of course. Never. But... You know, this is why I was a junior professional officer. They learned with me. Mm-hmm. I learned with them. Mm-hmm. It was all learning. And I met with them. And I learned very quickly. Also, there was a senior expert who I was working with. Mm-hmm. And I went
when you say that you were doing crops and planting crops to give them sustenance or some kind of sustainable food or whatever... Were you actually digging in the ground, or were you like supervising?
No, you know, as a matter of fact, all the people, and throughout my career, I can say this as a common information of all the people that I've ever visited and worked with in Africa and in Latin America, they know. These people know a lot.
Of course.
They know how to grow their food. They know how to survive. And growing
their food for centuries. Of course.
They know all of that. So it's not much that I have to teach. But some basic things that you had to teach them was, for instance, what's the value of your work?
Oh, okay. Yeah?
If you spend some time working on the field and you have to put a price to those peanuts or to those tomatoes, how will you determine a price that
is value,
that is fair for you, that's good for you, that will help you live and have a livelihood from the food that you grow?
Right.
This is a concept that is new because, of course, they live traditionally in an economy where things are just exchanged.
Barter.
But in a modern market economy where the currency comes in, you have to understand better the different rules of the game.
Right.
And so there is a new learning to acquire about that.
All right. So basically, let me just pick up what you put down. So you said that, like, you weren't helping, you weren't teaching them how to grow the crops because they already knew how to do that.
Didn't know.
So what you were teaching them was to put an economical value on their labor.
That's exactly
it. And so when you, what was that like for them when you came in and started to have an economic, it's not that they didn't have a value. I'm clear they had a value because they had an exchange situation. I'll give you nuts, you give me grain, right? Or I give you nuts and you do my hair or something, right?
Exactly.
So you're teaching them. So how did that occur to them?
Well, you see, this is how things differ very much from when you have a project or an idea and you write this on a paper and you then go on the ground and you discuss things with the population, then things are very different. Like, for instance, when you introduce a new concept, it is important to understand that sometimes people don't even know how to write and how to read.
Right.
And then numbers, you can write down a number and you suddenly realize it doesn't mean anything to them.
Right.
So when you try to introduce these new concepts, you have to also verify locally, what people already know and what is new to them. And then it takes a lot of patience and work to start introducing some new concepts and even teach some basic literacy, but it is taught is in its functionality in order for them to be able to use it. It's not that you put people in a classroom and you teach them things.
It's on the job learning.
It's on the job learning, exactly.
So we're going to come right back and we'll continue this story.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Did you know you've been playing poker your whole life, even if you've never played a hand of cards? Hi, I'm Ellen Lakend, author of Poker Woman and host of the new show, Poker Divas. On the show, I talk about how poker strategy helps you win in business, life, and love. Tune in live every Thursday, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, on talkradio.nyc.
Who do you want to connect with?
Are you an entrepreneur or intrapreneur looking to build your following?
Welcome to our show.
Follow Me Friday with Joan
and Priya.
Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern
on talkradio.nyc.
We're your digital connectors.
Woo, woo!
What's that?
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Hi, this is Noreen Sumter, and we're back on Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way. And I'm speaking tonight with Hannah Loffer Rotman. Look, if I don't mess up people's name, it's not a show, okay? So we were talking about Anna's first time in Burkina Faso. I do know that word. I dated somebody from Burkina Faso. And she was talking as a young 26-year-old landing in Burkina Faso and teaching certain understandings, right? So I was saying to her on the break that, you know, as a Westerner, when you go to a foreign country or what is deemed a third world country, one has to go in with a profound level of respect and understanding of what people are up to, because with our Western eyes, we see all kinds of devastation, right? We see all kinds of poverty, all kinds of nonsense, right? But it's not necessarily so. We have to like really reposition ourselves and really look at these people have been surviving without our technology for hundreds of thousands of years. And we have to respect what they know. And if we're going to support them, we have to integrate it into what they already know.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Yes, absolutely. This is one of the most important knowledge that we develop mm-hmm. as we do our work in the developing world.
Right.
We learn how to discuss with communities, mm-hmm. how to understand the way they operate. Mm-hmm. And like, for instance, if you arrive at a community where you know that who ultimately has to make a decision, and you meet with the women, and you know that they will never make a decision without the men mm-hmm. being present or without them having a moment to discuss it with the men mm-hmm. after you leave. You can't meet with them and say, we need you guys to make a decision right now.
Right.
Because they will be intimidated, and they, out of respect, they won't really contradict you openly. But they will not be very happy to be part of a project. They won't feel comfortable. They will be afraid that their husbands or their compañeros, you mm-hmm. know, in Latin America, will be angry if right. they are shut out of these conversations right. and of any decision. So we have to know that. So
it's not like Western with female ideology. Like, yeah. I am woman, hear me roar, and you don't tell me what to do.
Exactly.
and is it because uh-huh. it's just out of respect, right? It's not that yeah. these women are weak in any way.
Oh, no. These women are very strong. Okay. In fact, you see, I mean, there is so much power in their hands and in their everyday life. I mean, they hold those families and those structures together.
Mm-hmm.
And very often, you know, men drink a lot mm-hmm. in some mm-hmm. Latin American countries. Mm-hmm. That's a reality. You go to these villages, and on Sunday or Monday morning, you see those strong women carrying those men who are completely drunk on the ground. They carry them home, and they will drag them home.
Right.
Exactly. They're strong.
So so basically what I'm hearing is just a form of acknowledgement.
It is an acknowledgement, it is a respect. And when you do that, then they smile at you and they like you, they accept you, and then they open up.
Right.
And when they open up, it is a wealth of information that you get from them.
Right.
They even allow you to go into their kitchen. And once you're in the kitchen, you ask, oh, how do you do that? Oh, how do you grate the coconut? How do you get the milk out of that coconut?
Right.
Oh, and how do you store your potatoes from one day to the other? Right. And you learn so much. And then you become a friend, because mm-hmm. a woman talking about food with another woman,
right.
it's a big door opener. And I remember, you know, one day in Ecuador, I was in a community, a very interesting community, by the way. It is a community that is made out of people from African descent
mm-hmm.
in
mm-hmm.
Ecuador.
Mm-hmm. We're everywhere.
Uh-huh, yes, but it is. These yes. are very remote, isolated mm-hmm. places where
they have them in the Philippines also.
Oh, very interesting. Yeah. yeah. So we had this meeting with the group, and when I was about to leave, I was about to step in the car. We have had a wonderful encounter with these women, and you know, we had a wonderful conversation.
Mm-hmm.
This one woman runs after me and she says, "Can I ask you something?" I said, "Yeah, sure. How can I do not to have so many children?"
Oh, birth control.
See, yes. But she dared asking it to me in a very private and confidential way because mm-hmm. we had established a trust relationship. And then I told her, I gave her the advice of what to do, meaning she has to go to the local health center mm-hmm. and talk to the medical staff there. But this shows how, although me being a white woman among the black women, mm-hmm. we had a wonderful connection. And I remember when we left, this one woman from Esmeraldas, that's the province in mm-hmm. Ecuador where these black people live, the one woman came to me and she said, Hannah, you have the heart of a black woman, she said. And to me...
What do you think made her say that?
Because she realized that I was a non-judgmental person, mm-hmm. that I was a global mother. The mm-hmm. global means for everybody.
Right.
And I loved these people and I right. wanted to be close to them. And yeah. I did everything that I could to help them mm-hmm. and improve their livelihoods and bring food to the children and fight for their needs and their rights. And so, but that for me was part of what I was meant to do.
Right.
It's not that it was, you know, anything special. I didn't expect any reward right. for what I was doing. It was just right.
Right.
But what a wonderful opportunity to be doing things that are right.
I agree. I totally agree with that. So, you know, you had made a comment about, you know, these women, they hold, I'm just going to paraphrase and say life in their hands because they're so powerful. I remember being in Haiti. I've been to Haiti 7 times before the earthquake, and I was dating a Haitian guy at the time. And so we were driving around in the car, and I says, I'm so hungry, I want breakfast. And he knew where to go, and he goes, oh, do you want eggs? And I said, yeah, I want some boiled eggs. And so we go down to this market, and he comes and jumps out of the car and he goes over to this woman and she's sitting on, you know, sort of on a mat thing. And he tells her what I want. He gives her money and she gives him boiled eggs. And he comes out to the car and I have my boiled eggs. I got my boiled eggs, right? And so while I was driving through this market and driving through Haiti, what came to my mind was that women, like of the world, you know how they sit in the market and they've got their baskets down there and they've got their legs open like that and they're counting their money or doing whatever it is they're doing. It's like women literally hold life between their legs.
Mm-hmm.
Like not just in the form of the sex and babies, mm-hmm. but in terms of commerce and survival of mm-hmm. families and communities and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that's what, when you mentioned that, it really sort of brought back mm-hmm. to mind mm-hmm. that story.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, so this is indeed such an important knowledge and understanding because what we learn in development is you can't make development with ignoring one half of the population right. and not understanding the reality of each group. And women are agents of change.
Absolutely.
They are agents of change here and they are it there
everywhere.
As well.
Everywhere.
Yes.
Everywhere.
Absolutely.
So like, yeah. So you're 26, you're doing all this stuff, you're traveling all over the world, you're making a difference. And like, but what was it that spawned your now project? Let's step into that world.
Okay.
So your project is called?
This project now, Palms for Life Fund, mm-hmm. which is a non-for-profit mm-hmm. established here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. under what's called the 501c3. So mm-hmm. we have a status by the IRS for operating as a .org.
Right.
We have the capacity to collect donations mm-hmm. That are tax deductible.
Right.
And we,
you know, there's 1.5 million not-for-profit organizations in this country. 1.5 million.
This is amazing. You know, America is one of the most generous country in the world. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you
compare. Well, I should hope so. We're one of the richest countries in the world.
Yes, but there is the individual generosity. Mm-hmm. It's not only the governments donating from one government to the other a certain percentage of their income or their gross income, which, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes countries are compared. How much do they give from their gross income right. to development? And in the U.S., that percentage is not necessarily so large, but what individual Americans right. donate and how generous American people are, this is unique. This
right.
you don't find in
those
the rest of the
those
world.
Those are our qualities.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Amazing. I mean, you can really reach American people in their heart and get them to...
But we're still greedy.
Oh.
we still know, like big food.
Yeah.
When we go abroad, it's like, where's the food? Is that it? That was me on vacation. I realized I had become a greedy piglet American, which I'm okay with. No, Americans are extremely generous.
Absolutely.
In the money, when there's a need, money comes flowing in. You
absolutely
just have to ask.
Yeah, you have to ask. But you see, now then, as we talk about what is so important for Palms for Life, is actually that famous money that you talk about. Mm-hmm. And for me, what I want is for people to understand better the kind of work that we do. Mm-hmm. So the opportunity, for instance, to be here with you today on this show is excellent for me. It's perfect because I want people to know me better and to understand.
So how can we know you better?
By doing what you do.
A couple of seconds to do that, and then we got a break and come back. So how can we know you better? Just leave them with a cliffhanger.
Well, by asking all the questions that you ask.
I will ask questions.
By giving me that mic and for recognizing that I have a voice.
Great. Awesome. So we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Do you like comic books and movies? How about TV and pop culture? Then you've come to the right place. Hi, I'm Michael Dolce, host of Secrets of the Sire. Joined every week by my co-host, Hassan, Lord of the Radio Godwin, together we have over 15 years' experience creating graphic novels, screenplays, and more. Join us as we bring you the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about, Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, talkradio.nyc.
Are you feeling unhappy with your body, shape, or size? Ever feel out of control with food? I'm Elizabeth Tripp, your host of Nourish the Soul. Join me to uncover the root to these imbalances and discover a permanent solution to living a healthy life. Join us every Wednesday at my new time, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.nyc.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
So we're back. This is Noreen Sumter from Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way. And I'm with Hannah Loffer-Rotman, who is the founder of Palms for Life. And also, you're a founder of a film festival, right? Faces of Hunger Film Festival.
Correct.
Right. So tell me about Palms for Life. How did you come up with the name? It sounds very godly.
Thank you. Well, I was working...
reminds me of Palm Sunday.
Oh, I see. Well, yeah. When you look at our logo, you see that it has a shape of two... Originally, it was like two hands getting together. Mm-hmm. And the palms for life, the idea behind it is you give, I receive, we join hands, we join our efforts, and we can give life. And the image of palms, palm trees, is a very positive image. It's an image of protection, of friendship, of fertility, of love, and of...
Vacation.
Of vacation. it's a good, positive image. So I remember we had a little group that I established at our house. We had a lunch, and we said, after that lunch, we have to come up with a name. And so we did... we discussed and we looked at different opportunities, and suddenly this one came.
Right.
And it has everything that is important. It is the joining hands, the life idea, which is such a precious thing that we all have and we all want everybody to have. And everything that we do is for life, is right. for a better life. And right. In the beginning, when Palms for Life was established, I thought of all those different ways where we can join hands and make Palms a stronger organization. Right. Like I had, for instance, Cooking for Life, Bananas for Life, importing bananas from Ecuador and giving a percentage of the income of the sale from the bananas to the projects right. that we want to develop going back to Ecuador.
Right.
And I like to say at the time, I said, it's beyond fair trade, because fair trade is basically about the prices that mm-hmm. are being negotiated. But having money to go to give back to those banana growers mm-hmm. to educate their children mm-hmm. and so on. So I had this project, Banana for Life, then Chocolate for Life, then Art for Life, right. and I can tell you more. Actually, that's one of the projects.
So these are all the extensions.
All the different extensions, and it all the idea behind everything is that everything in life can be transformed into a positive energy, right. into life.
So you need money, right? So who doesn't need money? It's like, so how do you get your money?
Well, there are different ways.
Apart from the projects that you create,
that's
and then
exactly.
you put the money back into it, how else do you get projects?
Well, in fact, the projects that we create is not so simple, because it goes both ways. We can create a project and then be there sitting and waiting
right.
and not having the funds to right. put the project into motion.
Mm-hmm.
So we work on different fronts. One of them is to develop friendships mm-hmm. and trust relationships. Mm-hmm. And we have a few families that are very dear to us and that give us annually a certain amount of money that mm-hmm. is our survival. Mm-hmm. I always tell
them.
So
you have benefactors.
We do have a few.
Mm-hmm.
A few. We need more
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
we could do more. We could grow more if we had more funds.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other hand, what we also do is we present funding proposals when there is a call for proposals mm-hmm. by an organization. Like, for instance, the European Union is known for putting out calls for proposals on different right. subjects and
right.
areas that they want to develop. And then they invite the NGO community
mm-hmm.
to present proposals. Well, we have won two competitions with the EU
mm-hmm.
in Southern Africa, thank
right.
you, in Eswatini. So we have an amazing program there. Before the EU, we were able to attract a big amount of money for a big project also mm-hmm. in Eswatini, which is now called Eswatini. It's mm-hmm. a kingdom. It was called Swaziland.
Okay, yeah.
You
yeah,
know Swaziland, of yeah. course. Yeah, so now it's called Eswatini.
Everything's changing.
Everything's changing. But the king of Swaziland decided that Eswatini was more in line with
I kind of like Swaziland. It's more, it gives more, it says more boldness in the mouth. How do you say that other one? Equatini?
Eswatini.
Eswatini.
Yeah.
Mm. Sounds tiny.
Well,
it's not very full bodied.
We have to, once okay. we are used
we'll get
to
used
something.
To it, you know.
Yeah. But anyway, so there I found funds from the US government. So that was also an opportunity that we presented a proposal to, and we won that competition.
So how do you find, are you combing through
yes.
periodicals? How are you finding this?
There are search engines,
right.
and you have to look. Sometimes people come to you and say, look, there is an opportunity there. Why don't you apply? Which I have done a lot in the last, since Palms for Life was founded mm-hmm. in 2006. We mm-hmm. have done a lot of what we call writing funding proposals.
Right.
I think we are very good at doing that.
Well, you should be by now.
We are very good, yes, because you know I have my 30 years of having worked with the UN
right.
on projects, and I have learned. You know, I'm not shy about the fact that I'm an expert in this field.
Right.
I know what a good development project looks like.
Right.
But you see, I'm not the only one. There are another 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people who also know that
yes.
and also present proposals and. The number of no's that we get after we submit a funding proposal is devastating.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's such a big effort to write those projects and to connect with people and say, what do you think is a good one? I mean, it's a lot of work. And
right.
then to receive a no is Oh, no.
But you keep on, you pull your socks up and you get going again.
Yes, but now I'm trying to do things a little bit differently.
And what's that, what does that different look like?
The difference is that, like, for instance, you know, we have an amazing, beautiful story mm-hmm. about another country in Southern Africa called Namibia.
Yeah,
you might know yes. Namibia. It's a very special, interesting country. I've been there once.
Mm-hmm.
I met a person who wanted, who has funds. He's very wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And we, there is a long story about how we finally
Give me
connected.
The short version. We only have an hour.
The short version is we connected.
Mm-hmm.
He liked what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
He trusted me. And mm-hmm. he said, look, I want to develop a project in Namibia
mm-hmm.
for the San people. The San, S-A-N.
San people.
The San people. Okay. The San people is a group, is an ethnic group mm-hmm. that exists for many, many, I mean, they are the genetic, one of the genetic founders of humanity.
Are they the little tiny people?
The Bushmen, little, yes.
Yeah, the Bushmen. Okay,
yes.
Got it.
It's a derogative term.
Right. No,
so people don't use anymore, although many people still use right. the word Bushmen. But it's
but that's how we know them, right? And I wouldn't say
yes,
it derogatively.
Exactly. No, of course that,
But
no.
I call them the yeah. tiny people because yeah. they're very small.
Yes, and you have seen some yes. films about
yes.
them, yeah, which they don't necessarily support. I mean, they don't think it's an accurate vision of
no.
who they are. But they are a very interesting group. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, they have suffered a lot throughout history.
Mm-hmm.
And that man, who is this very wealthy individual, says, I want to do something for the San children mm-hmm. in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to do it. I have nobody who can do that for me. I said, I'm taking the challenge.
Right.
I'll do that for you.
Right.
I've never been to Namibia. But I started moving everything I could. I contacted UNICEF. I have an ongoing relationship with UNICEF. I know them. It's UN. So UNICEF, other people. I did all my research. Long story short, last July,
mm-hmm.
I was officially invited by the government of Namibia to present a first report that reproduced about the situation of the San children.
Mm-hmm.
Dramatic, horrible situation.
Mm-hmm.
Poverty,
mm-hmm.
genocide, mm-hmm. marginalization. Everything that you can imagine that goes wrong with the people, the women, the mm-hmm. children, the young girls. I mean, it's...
What's the population of the San people?
The San people mm-hmm. live in Namibia,
mm-hmm.
in Botswana
mm-hmm.
and in South Africa.
Right.
The numbers, there are different groups. In fact, it is a large group made out of several different ethnic, sub-ethnic groups.
Right.
So in Namibia, there are maybe 60,000 people altogether.
60,000 San people?
San people.
Oh, okay.
And they have lost their land. Many live in settlements. Some still have been
Because they were in the desert, right? They mostly live in
yes,
the desert.
There are two deserts, actually, mm-hmm. in Namibia. And so they live in different parts. And in Botswana, the same.
Mm-hmm.
And in South Africa also. And they have their language still.
Mm-hmm.
Altogether, I'm told, there are about 30 San languages still alive.
Wow.
No dialects, languages.
Right.
To the point where they don't even understand each other. So different
yes.
those languages are. But now, so after we produced that report and the government invited us, that person, the generous man
mm-hmm.
who lives here in mm-hmm. New York, he is putting the money into that project.
Oh, cool.
So it's not anymore me going out and begging and looking for
yeah,
an opportunity.
You've got that project set.
He wants us to do things
right.
that where everybody's winning.
Right.
For me, because Palms for Life has an opportunity, and it's not that I can cover it. I can talk about the whole world, but I
right.
can't do things
so
in the
question,
entire world.
I have another question.
Yes.
So of the contributions that you get, what is the percentage that goes into your projects?
Well, normally, in the case of the funds you receive from the EU,
mm-hmm.
it's 93%.
Oh, good.
So 7% can be, as per their rules, can be used as overhead.
Right.
And so then we can get that 7% overhead to support our administrative expenses.
Right.
But recently they even lowered it to 3%.
Right.
when we get
private donations,
when we get private donations, I try as much as possible those small private donations to support us here, because we have a few people, we have an office, you know, we need some, we have some admin expenses.
So you have, you're run by not-for-profit and volunteers mostly?
I have interns. We have, here in the US, we have 2.5 people on the payroll. That's it. The others are interns. In Swaziland, we have a big office in Eswatini. We have a big office. There were moments where we had 16, 17 people, but they are all paid by project money, not by directly our funds.
Got it.
So this is how we operate. But in general, I would say that almost 100% of the funds that we receive for projects go to the project. And I like for donors to understand that they have the choice between to
project,
give to
or
a project
or administration.
Exactly, or to an administration of both. In fact, ideally, they should realize we can't run a project if we don't have
exactly.
the funds.
I remember, because I used to work in not-for-profit, and one of a lot of the money that I, when I did work in not-for-profit, used to go to a lot of the money went to administration. And, you know, so I've become very sort of cautious in who and where I donate my funds to. And if it's not at least 90%, I'm not interested. Yeah.
That's wonderful. I think this is an important information. You know, the there is, I think, official data that you can find on the internet about how much the NGOs charge as overhead. And some go as high as 80% overhead. And
I
then,
we,
you know.
Who will remain nameless.
And and those are indicators of, you know, do we need that?
Right. You know. So we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Okay.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
The best designs for your life start at home. I'm David Thiergartner, interior designer and host of At Home. Listen live Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time as we talk to the very best professionals about interior design and the design that's all around us, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you feeling unhappy with your body, shape, or size? Ever feel out of control with food? I'm Elizabeth Tripp, your host of Nourish the Soul. Join me to uncover the root to these imbalances and discover a permanent solution to living a healthy life. Join us every Wednesday at my new time, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.nyc.
TalkingAlternative.com.
And we're back. This is Noreen Sumter on Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way. And I am speaking tonight with Hannah Loffer Rotman. I did it right. So, Hannah, on the break, you mentioned food, you know. So let's just jump into that. You have an organization and a film festival, Faces of Hunger Film Festival. So how does that tie in with food?
Oh, very interesting. Thank you for that question. Well, it first goes back to what we started our conversation with, which was global mother. What does the global mother do? She feeds her children.
Yes.
Okay, so that's one of my big passions. I worked with the UN World Food Program for almost 30 years in many countries, twice in Ecuador. Ecuador is a little bit like a home country for us because my children actually spend most of their young life in Ecuador.
Ecuador,
5 years once, another five years, amazing experience there. So when I started Palms for Life in the U.S., I decided that in the U.S., while I would work internationally on all the issues that we talk about, you know, the education, access to water, sanitation, all of that, in the U.S., we would focus on food and hunger. Actually, it's more labeled as food insecurity. And why? It's because the numbers of people in America...
Food insecurity.
Yes. Food insecurity. What does that mean?
Yeah, what does
you
that
could,
mean?
You know, it's, you would say, yes, is it a politically correct way of talking about hunger? In certain cases, yes. But in the, a definition, a softer definition is that it means that in this case, more than 45 million Americans, of which maybe 11 million are children, do experience moments throughout the year where they don't have enough food.
Right.
Or where they have to make choices between paying the rent or eating.
Okay.
So there is a large number of American people. When you go on the website of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, you can find the official data. Every year it changes, but I have, when we started talking about hunger in America, it was 50 million Americans, 15 million children. It went down a little bit, 48 million Americans. So there are official data about who are those families and also where do those families who are food insecure, where do they live? And in which state is there more food insecurity?
And where is it?
Well, I don't have the numbers right now, but it's certainly the southern states have much more food insecurity than the other
food
states.
Food insecurity, that sounds really
food
weird.
Food insecurity.
I mean, know, it's like a weird statement.
It is an amazing statement. So, you know, because I'm a foodie and because it's such an important subject to me, I said, let's do something. It's not that I'm going to feed 48 million Americans, but let's at least talk about it. Let's raise the level of awareness about the fact that so many Americans, too many Americans, experience insufficient food access throughout the year. Adults, children, it's wrong.
So let me ask a question, because there's a food pantry in my community in Clinton Hill. It's been there for like, I don't know, I didn't even know what it was. I'd ride by in a car. And for years, and I had no idea what it was, people standing outside this church building getting food, all kinds of people. And one day a friend of mine said to her, do you want to get some free food? Said to me, you want to get some free food? And I said, what kind of food? She said, free food. So I said, I'll come with you. And so it was this place that I'd been driving by for years, right? And so what they do is on Sundays, they give away a lot of produce, right, which is greens and vegetables and stuff like that. And during the course of the week, they give away processed, like I don't know what you call it, but
cans,
good cereal, rice,
or dry food. Let's say.
They'd give away some meats. They'd give away juice and more vegetables and all kinds of stuff, right? And honestly, I will tell you that they say that they have more food than they have people, right? And so I did like a survey how many pantries are in New York City. There's a lot of pantries. I can't remember the number completely because I did it for a friend of mine. But there are a lot of pantries, food pantries, where organizations like Whole Foods or Trader Joe's or Farmers and all kinds of, they drop off food in these pantries because I know some of the food that is in that pantry comes from the farmer's market on a Saturday, right? So the farmer market comes to Brooklyn on Saturday and they drop off stuff. I mean, I guess they don't want to take it home. They drop off stuff in the mat. And it's really good stuff. Stuff that I would go to the farmer's market and actually buy.
Exactly.
Right? And so if there's if there's access to food, but there's not enough people to get this food, then what?
Well, you see, this is one of the things that doesn't go very well in the system, in the food system in mm-hmm. America, in the United States. There is something wrong with a system where people cannot, in a dignifying way, go to the store, have enough income, buy the food that they need, go home and prepare it like everybody else. Mm-hmm. Why do some people have to stand in a line, go to a pantry, receive the food as a, in the form of a handout? It's a not a very dignifying experience. We have to do it. And you know, I am...
You don't have to.
No.
There's no have to at that pantry. And I've asked them, I said, can anybody get this food? And they're like, yeah, anybody can get this food. Yes. I said, can I get this food? And they were like, yeah, you can get this food. And I got the food for a little while, and then I just didn't want to stand in line anymore, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was like, if somebody doesn't get the food, the rest of it goes to waste.
Yes, exactly, I know.
So there's mm-hmm. somehow there's the communication about it is not mm-hmm. reaching out mm-hmm. to the populace. I didn't know about it, and I drove by this place for years, mm-hmm. right? And some of that food was really good.
Oh, yes. I'm sure it must be.
No,
it's be totally
the farmer's
edible.
Stuff is wonderful, right? Yeah. It's really fresh. It's really green. Yeah. It's great. And it's organic.
Absolutely,
right?
Yes.
And there's all the other crap as well. But
and you don't want to know about food being thrown away, which is already big. I mean, the topic of food waste.
Yeah, I was reading something where there's a European country that they have these food sort of like bank stuff. Like they don't. It was something, it's a new law that came into effect or something that organizations, supermarkets are not allowed to throw out food, good food anymore. They have to get it to these special banks. I can't remember what it is, but I saw it like a couple of weeks ago. And so these, and it's not, it's a European, it's European countries that are creating this access so that they people can get food. Mm-hmm. How comes we can't do something like that mm-hmm. here?
Absolutely. I mean, we can certainly learn from many countries because many countries have found...
We have a lot of food.
Yes. I mean, there is so much food here. And as I said, there is this problem of waste. But the main problem I think that has to be addressed is how can we ensure that people who need the food have access to the food in the most dignifying way? How come that so many places in America are called food deserts? There is no fresh food to be seen. Nobody can get a lettuce. Nobody can get anything green. The only thing they get are canned goods of poor quality. They can't get anything organic. If they want to get something of a healthy food, they have to drive, which costs a lot. Where is this? The, how do you call this? The footprints about people having to drive many, many miles in order to go to a store. And then it costs more money. People have an income problem, so they don't go to buy the fresh food.
So do you think this issue will ever be resolved on the planet?
On the planet? We hope so. But I'm sure that there is a lot of work. There's a lot of effort that is happening right now. People who get together and try to find creative ways.
I think the young people are coming together to find creative Absolutely. Ways to support and help.
Yes.
And I think mm-hmm. that I think they're doing a great job. You know, a lot of people don't like millennials, but I think they're awesome.
Absolutely.
Because they are actually changing structures.
And, you know, precisely under that Faces of Hunger film festival, what we did on October 16, which was World Food Day, mm-hmm. We got a partnership with an organization called Universities Fighting World Hunger. Mm-hmm. And they have chapters with hundreds of universities all over the U.S., we worked with them, and we had 32 universities in the U.S. who signed up to have access to the films, and they screened those films among the students, mm-hmm. universities, mm-hmm. the millennials, mm-hmm. and then we gave them discussion guides. So they showed the films, they had a discussion, and they decided how they can get together and do something to work on food and hunger and all those complex issues around food. Mm-hmm. So this is under the Faces of Hunger. So we have those films, and we give them to people to watch and to discuss. And at least, as I said, even if we don't solve the issue of world hunger, we can at least raise the level of awareness and have people become more alert, more ready to do something, more conscious about their own environment.
So this conversation of world hunger, I think the word, it needs to be changed, the conversation, the title needs to be shifted to a higher vibration for one, world hunger, because that doesn't, it says, oh, the world's going to be hungry instead of like, you know, feeding the world or something like that.
Yeah.
Has been a topic of conversations ever since I was like 5 years old.
Yeah.
You know, and that's as far back as I can remember. And I'm 55 now. Mm-hmm. Am I? Yeah, 55. Right. And it's like, it used to be, eat your food because there's kids in Biafra that are starving.
Exactly. Yes. That's right.
I'll be like, Mom, put in an envelope and send it to them. I'm not eating. But this is a conversation that's been going on for 50 years, as far as I know, mm-hmm. in my lifetime, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to know, when is this going to be a conversation of, like, we fed the world, we're feeding the world, and, you know. And then there's also the side of, we're going to take a break. I was going into a tangent. Oh, we're over. Oh, bloody hell. That was a really great show. We've come to the end so rapidly. Because it was a really great show. I just want to say thank you for coming on.
Thank you,
I wish
Noreen.
We had more time, but
yes,
we don't.
Yes, yes.
And thank you.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening. And I'll see you next week on Beyond Potential. Live life your way. Oopsie. Bye.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Do you like comic books and movies? How about TV and pop culture? Then you've come to the right place. Hi, I'm Michael Dolce, host of Secrets of the Sire. Joined every week by my co-host, Hassan, Lord of the Radio, Godwin. Together, we have over 15 years' experience creating graphic novels, screenplays, and more. Join us as we bring you the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, talkradio.nyc.
Did you know you've been playing poker your whole life, even if you've never played a hand of cards? Hi, I'm Ellen Lakend, author of Poker Woman and host of the new show, Poker Divas. On the show, I talk about how poker strategy helps you win in business, life, and love. Tune in live every Thursday, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.